This is Fred Ricciani of TSC News right here on YouTube with my man Scott Anderson making an appearance for the first time in months. He said he was going to wear the legit boss sunglasses if Sasha Banks captured the women's championship. And holy doodle squat, she did. We had a ridiculous amount of title changes, the most title changes in SummerSlam history. We are here to talk about SummerSlam. We're here to talk about my live experience at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. And we are here to talk about what you guys want to talk about. Just leave a comment below. Tweet us. Facebook us. You know the deal. And if you're watching this live or after the fact, please feel free to click that subscribe button, that like button, and that share button. It would be much appreciated. Scott, I didn't even start this recap, and I'm almost out of breath after our main event. What's going on, man?
It's been a while, Fred, for sure. I think last time we did one of these live was WrestleMania.
Yeah.
It's been a while. We've had some things going on for sure. I've had some things going on for sure.
Yeah, so before we get to our recap, really quickly, do you want to tell fans what the hell you've been up to?
Well, looks like I'm adding one more to the stable come January.
Are you saying that you're having a child?
Not me personally, but my wife is. Yes, we are having another daughter come January. So.
Congratulations, my man.
Yes, yes. So awesome. This little bit of hair that I have left will be gone for sure.
Awesome.
These glasses will be covering up the bags under my eyes, but thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Great.
Brooke, for her birthday, she wanted a baby sister, and, well, we delivered.
Hell yeah, man. Congratulations. If you guys want to send your well wishes to Scott and his new baby girl and his wife, you could obviously hit him up on Facebook if you guys are friends. You could obviously comment below, or you could tweet him directly at ScottA1979. Maybe you could even tweet him a link to a spell check program.
You know, tonight, from what I saw, my friend, you needed that link, but, you know.
Yeah, I have our bad days.
Yeah, we do. It happens.
One guy that had a great day, but also a bad day or a bad night was Brock Lesnar. He walked out still your WWE Universal Champion, but Jesus Christmas, he took a crap ton of punishment in order to do so.
He did.
Whew.
Give the guy credit. You know, I'm not a big Lesnar fan, but he takes bumps. He definitely can sell a move like it's nobody's business. So, you know. For a guy making the kind of money he does to do what he does, I give him credit.
This match was nuts. I think we witnessed what should, hands down, be the match of the year for WWE. Not for all of pro wrestling. I'd still probably put Omega Okada, maybe Omega Okada 3, up there because that was the best match I've ever seen other than HBK Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25. Take away the G1. If you're talking about just WWE... between NXT and WWE main roster. I mean, I think it's a toss-up between Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne from TakeOver Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think.
I was about Cena AJ at the Rumble.
Cena AJ at the Rumble, that's what I was thinking of. And this match right here.
And you know what? Honestly, I don't think it would be a match of the year, but what about DIY and the AOP from TakeOver back in May? That was a pretty damn good ladder match.
That was a damn good ladder match, and given the experience level of AOP, I mean, yeah, that was a hell of a match. I mean... But I got to say, and this is just my opinion, maybe I'm just still reeling from the moment, but I think this is the best match of the year for WWE. One of the best matches of the year, period. Just four awesome professional wrestlers who have been well-protected over the last couple of years, who have been booked like complete badasses. No BS, no 50-50 booking, no slip on a banana peel, no, oh, he got schoolboyed, no, oh, their opponent stole one. No, these were four badass, believable, keyword, believable dudes.
Yes.
Who were in the ring at the same time, out of the ring at the same time, and holy hell, they, well, unleashed hell. There were so many spots in this match. There was Roman spearing Brock through the barricade. There was Braun, the MVP of the match, hitting not one, but two running power slams, shades of the man, the British Bulldog, God rest his soul. Not through one table, but through two announcers' tables. On top of that, in a spot that was very reminiscent of Mark Henry's days as the standard bearer of the Hall of Pain, Braun picked up the announcers' table and just threw it on top of Lesnar. Lesnar gets stretchered out. Later in the match, he was able to come back. He was able to survive the onslaught of Braun Strowman, but he never, that's the wrong title, Scott, but for those that are listening to the podcast, Scott has the old spinner belt in the background, and for whatever reason, the Divas Championship, and he's just having a little too much fun spinning it. Okay.
You know what's funny? Hold on, real quick. I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is how old this belt is. When I found it, I picked it up at a yard sale. It had a little label maker label on it. I'll give you $20 right now, Fred, if you can tell me the name on that title.
The Miz.
No. That's a good guess. It was Jeff Hardy.
Wait, what?
Yeah. The little label maker said Jeff Hardy on it, because I guess back in, what was it, 08, 09, when he held the title?
That would have been like late 08, early 09.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Just wanted to throw that in there.
Hey, it's nice to know that you guys in Delaware have some hobbies like yard sales. So, this match was badass. Brock came back. He withstood the onslaught of 1, 2, 3 Roman Reigns Superman punches. He kicked out. I think he kicked out of a spear earlier in the match, right? Did he kick out of a spear? Somebody kicked out of a spear. It was either him or Braun.
Everybody kicked out of it. Well, got saved, kicked out of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a lot of moves. But real quick, though, you said it best, though. They did a lot of spots. So it was a lot of tables and barricades and chairs being thrown. You know, so good match. But was it really a match, or was it just kind of pandemonium that made it so good?
Dude, a great match is a great match. And at the end of the day, within the context of the rules and the universe of the match, it was an excellent, excellent match. I mean, well, you know, if you're talking about just straight up best wrestling match of the year, honestly, I would say either, as far as what I've seen in the major promotions, I'd say either Okada, Omega, take your pick, or Bate and Dunn from TakeOver. In terms of just bell to bell, if you want to go like, you know what I mean? If you want to talk about like, you know, bell to bell within the rules, no like steel chairs or any of that crap.
Well, I was going to say, I'll give it to WWE for 5.5 hours into a show to put on that type of match is credit, you know, to those four guys for sure.
True, but you know what? But you know what, though? It would have been very hard for these guys to have a bad match either. I mean, there's caliber guys. I mean, Joe's been great for years. Brock's been great for years. Roman Reigns is an underrated great worker. Braun Strowman has improved significantly the last 2 years. It's unbelievable. And granted, he's kind of an anomaly. Okay, compared to these other big lugs that WWE tends to sign that go nowhere. But as far as I'm concerned, forget guys like Seth Rollins and Cesaro and, you know, the NXT guys who have raised the bar really high for guys like Big Cass, okay? Braun Strowman has officially raised the bar for big men in WWE going forward. And granted, his matches are a little patterned and he's booked very smartly and you know, they protect him relatively well. But Braun Strowman, these last 6 months, ever since he had that match with Roman Reigns at Fastlane where he really broke out, has had a great 2017 in the ring, okay? It's nothing pretty, but he just gets it, man. He just gets it. And when I hear people that say, oh, well, you know, Baron Corbin's still young, oh, Big cast us. No, listen, man. Listen.
There's guys and then there's guys.
Braun Strowman had, and again, Braun Strowman's an anomaly, but Braun Strowman had 10 freaking matches or maybe a dozen matches before he got called up to the main roster. Think about that, okay?
Nothing on TV either.
Yeah, and he was horrible, okay, at first. And I'm sure he admitted he was horrible, but he's gotten better. I'm not saying Big Cass or Baron Corbin, whoever other guys that are big, have to overnight, you know, become great workers or good workers or guys that can, you know, hold their own in a main event match all the time. But they definitely need to improve if they want to stay on top. Because as far as I'm concerned, when you get a big guy like Braun, who's improved that much in a short amount of time, hell, Roman Reigns is a pretty big guy too. And look how much that guy's improved. Think about when he got first called up, and I remember he did this wild spot where I think it was CM Punk was trying to do like a power bomb, or he was up for a power bomb, and Roman Reigns errantly speared him, and he looked green as hell. Fast forward from 2012 to now, and look how great of a worker Roman Reigns is. Okay, these guys have raised the bar. So the dudes that are just getting by on their size and their looks in WWE, you better take notice or you are going to sink, not swim. So
yeah,
back to the match. Roman Reigns hit not one, not two, but 3 Superman punches on Lesnar. Was going to go for a spear. Actually, he did go for the spear. Got hit with the boot by Lesnar. Lesnar hit the F5. 1, 2, 3. Pinned Roman Reigns clean as a sheet, which surprised me because I thought they'd do the predictable route of Lesnar retains, which is Joe gets pinned because, you know, he's not technically their quote-unquote guy. He's a guy from the outside. But that didn't happen. Roman Reigns got pinned, And I like it because, on one hand, Roman Reigns is not hurt at all by this loss. On the other hand, you could use this for his character to emphasize that, man, Roman Reigns thought he had him, he lost, and use it as a plot device going forward. And what you could do is, and while I'm not too keen on this match, okay, if they really want to go in this direction, which has been the rumored direction for a while for WrestleMania 34 now in New Orleans, you could have Roman versus Brock. And you can bring up the fact that in their first meeting at WrestleMania 31, Roman withstood everything Brock gave him, but he could not put Brock away. And in their second meeting, which is in this Fatal 4-Way, he threw everything at Lesnar, and he couldn't put him away, and this time he got pinned. So you can make WrestleMania 34 kind of the third time's a charm. Now what you can also do, and frankly speaking, this might be the better option given his mainstream appeal, maybe you pivot from Reigns and Lesnar, or at least at WrestleMania. Maybe you do it at Survivor Series, maybe you do it at Royal Rumble. And you do Reigns versus Cena at WrestleMania, because how many times do they want a big outside star? How many times do they want to try to get that big celeb to give them that crossover appeal, right? Well, guess what? This is the rare time in their history where they have a guy in John Cena who's about to star in Transformers, okay? That is more or less a WWE guy through and through, not really going anywhere. I mean, he's going to be in Hollywood, but he's still with WWE. He could lend his star power to a Roman Reigns feud. And you don't even have to pay him more than you would, like, another guy. You don't sound too keen on that, Scott. Okay, what would you do?
I mean, no, here's the thing. How many times can you do the Roman Reigns redemption story? You did it a couple years ago when he beat Triple H. You're going to do it again. The Cena thing is fine, but, you know, look, Cena was in the opening match versus Baron Corbin, and he got his first SummerSlam win since 2010 when he beat 26 guys in the Nexus. Okay, cool. But, yeah, it would be a cool match, and I guess that's kind of where you have to go with it. But, again, what are you going to do? Have Roman beat Undertaker, Cena, and back-to-back years at Mania? It does nothing for Roman. Tonight, at least, you gave the crowd what they wanted, pretty much, when Roman getting pinned. So that was cool.
Well, you know, but it was pretty...
Roman's just a lame duck. I mean, he unfortunately is a lame duck, because unless... The only thing that could have worked for him tonight was if you had tonight and, like, last night did at NXT.
True.
And, without that happening, without Roman going heel, and even then it's not going to matter, the guy's just going to be where he is. They can push him all you want, but like you just said, you have Braun Strowman coming up, and this guy... I mean, he's everything in one, and it's amazing to see a guy that big move that quick, do those moves, and just be that agile. So, I mean, I don't know where you go with him.
I mean, I think there's a place for Roman Reigns, and you know what? At the end of the day, the guy still has a fan base. It's not like he's totally bombed, and he's, you know, he does sell merch. He does have a lot of fans. I mean, look on Twitter, look at the people that buy his shirts. I mean, there is a big Roman nation out there, but it was pretty evident tonight, and granted, it's more of a hardcore crowd. How much he wasn't over compared to Joe and Lesnar and especially Strowman. I mean, granted, it's four alpha males in the ring, right? Somebody's got to be in fourth place. But you mentioned heel. With Cena, I could see them maybe having Roman go heel. And I brought this up this past week in my SmackDown recap. You could have Roman versus Cena or Roman versus Brock at WrestleMania. And you could have Roman turn heel, but not having the Shield help him win and turning heel, because at the end of the day, I think people are going to cheer the Shield, right? You could although that might be a good reverse psychology way of getting Roman over. You could have the Authors of Pain help out Roman Reigns. Notice they dress very similar offense. No. These two big brooding dudes. And if you really want to compare their progress, haven't they not significantly improved over the last year? Kind of like Roman did when he first started out in WWE.
Well, yeah, but you can also say, you know, tonight Roman, Dean, and Seth all wore red and black. I mean, what's your point?
My point is, I think if Roman Reigns turned heel, if they did what they did in New Japan Pro Wrestling with Los Ingobernables, where Tetsuya Naito was this nice babyface, great wrestler, better worker than Roman Reigns, nothing against Roman Reigns, but great wrestler, but fans didn't want him. Fans didn't want him as a babyface. They wanted to boo him. So what did they do? They turned him heel. They put him with this badass stable, kind of similar to the Shield. And what happens? While he's technically a heel, right now he's the most over guy in the company. So you could either do that with the Shield, if you want to try with Authors of Pain, which is my idea, whatever. Maybe you could do the Shield reunion, and then eventually do it where he breaks away and joins with the Authors of Pain. Whatever. But I think that's a way, maybe the only way at this point, where you can get Roman Reigns to, I don't know if realizing his maximum potential is the right terminology, but being more over than he is.
You gotta let the guy just be the guy. That's the problem.
And I think he can as a heel. Just let it fly. Even The Rock hinted that a while ago. I don't know if it was WrestleMania before WrestleMania 31 or 32, but he had an Instagram post where he pretty much said, "Hey, I had to turn heel, and then a year later, I became the most over guy in the company."
Yeah.
So we'll see. Right. But Brock retained. This was an excellent, excellent main event match. Just tremendous stuff. Give it all the stars. This was a great, great match, man. Just really a tremendous stuff. Speaking of title matches, well, you know what? Let's start from the beginning.
You want to start at 5:30 when they brought up the NXT Armory crowd?
Oh, God, yeah. The Lakeland, Florida crowd?
Oh, man. Hey, no disrespect to Lakeland, but yeah. That was bad.
Oh, boy. Okay.
That's brutal.
Yeah, we had a more or less an empty arena match, which kicked off on the kickoff show with The Miz, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel with Maurice defeating Jason Jordan, Angle, and the Hardy Boys in a six-man tag. This was a nothing match. I don't even know who pinned who. I think Miz got the win.
Miz hit the skull-crushing finale on Jordan.
Yeah, I was kind of busy, you know, eating.
The best part of the whole match is after the match when The Miz goes up to the one guy on the hard camera side and gets in his face, and you see just like 20 rows of empty seats.
Oh, man.
Apparently, though, they opened the gates at 5 o'clock, and the match came on at, like, right around 5:30. So, bad timing there on somebody's part.
Maybe somebody's been watching Game of Thrones. They take a while to open the gates. Open the gates! Open the gates! Ugh, poor Jon Snow. We had Neville beat Akira Tozawa to regain the Cruiserweight Championship.
Okay.
I actually missed this match. Scott, did you get a chance to watch it?
Yeah, it was a decent match. It had the same finish, I believe, that the Rumble had when he won the title. Mm-hmm. Tozawa went for the senton. Off the top rope, hit, got the knees. Neville put him on his belly, hit the red arrow, and pinned him. I mean, that was pretty much it. It was cool that Tozawa had the title for a minute, but in the end, I guess it just doesn't do anything for anybody. Doesn't do anything for the brand of the Cruiserweight division, 205 Live, and it is what it is. It was a match, you know?
I agree. It was a match, and I didn't watch it, but just hearing your description, I mean, yeah, it sounds like it was just a match, and very unfortunate that Tozawa just loses. He becomes the very, very poor man's Lex Luger, for those that don't get that reference.
Ooh, man, and almost the same time, too. That's...
Yeah, actually, yeah, almost, wow. yeah, 20 years ago. For those that don't know, like 20 years ago on a random Nitro before, I think it was Road
Wild. It was in Detroit,
which is a hot wrestling city, yeah.
Well, and that was Luger's home.
Oh, that's right.
So keep that in mind.
Nitro, 6 nights before a pay-per-view, I think it was Road Wild. Okay,
yep.
Lex Luger, after Hulk Hogan had been reigning as champion for like a year with the NWO, submitted Hogan with a torture rack. Crowd goes nuts. WCW celebrates. He wins his second WCW World Championship. For those who want to talk junk about Lex Luger, okay, the guy was so over back in 1997, it wasn't even funny. I mean, this guy was a star. Oh, my God.
He was replacing Sting, too, when Sting was doing his crow gimmick.
Yeah. So what happened? 6 days later, Hulk Hogan just beats him for the freaking title.
And the funny thing is that the same ending, except Hogan, I believe, hit him with the belt. Because the ending in the Nitro match was Hall and Nash come out. They get in the ring, get involved, but don't touch Luger. Luger takes them out, puts them in the rack. Same thing happens 6 days later, which I think that pay-per-view was a Saturday night, too.
And you want to know something funny? Because I watch along with Brian Alvarez and the Nitros and the Raws from 19 years ago, because he reviews them.
Well, I lived through them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I watch them here and there.
I was your age back then almost. Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Ugh, I just aged myself. So, well, I'm not that old.
So I was watching the Nitro, and Bret Hart randomly had the U.S. title again. And the week before, Lex Luger had beaten him for the U.S. title. So it turns out that around 19 years ago or so, Lex Luger on a random Nitro beat Bret Hart for the U.S. title. And then, or somebody for U.S. title, I think it was Bret Hart. And then, literally like 3 or 4 days later on WCW Thunder, which was their Thursday show, Luger lost the U.S. title. So,
Well, I mean, WWE used to do that sometimes with Raw and SmackDown.
Well, they did it with the U.S. title just now, but I'm just saying, like, it's ironic because, I think it's ironic with Tozawa because Tozawa had a 6-day reign, kind of like Lex Luger, almost 20 years ago. So, I'm sure a bunch of kids right now are watching this, going, "Who the hell's Lex Luger? Is he Superman's
what's Nitro?
Enemy? Yeah, is he Superman's enemy?"
You know what's funny? Go back and watch that when the in-ring celebration happens, and look at the face talent of WCW at that time, and I mean, besides, you know, the Big Show coming out and, you know, 108 pounds of Rey Mysterio, not a whole lot.
Man, good times.
Moving on.
Good times. So
good times.
Yeah, so that was – so, yeah, anyway.
I actually just watched that a couple weeks ago because it brings a tear to my eye to see, you know, random title wins. I don't know why.
No, that was an all-time great wrestling moment, I think. It was awesome.
It was cool.
Speaking of great moments, this is a great match. Maybe the greatest pre-show match of all time.
Wait, hold on. Before you get to that match, you forgot something. What? Maybe you missed it. We had a concert.
We had a concert?
You missed Elias?
Oh, I saw it on Twitter. I didn't bother staying to watch
Elias
it.
Elias came out and he did a couple songs, and that was it. Just wanted to mention it.
Great recap, Scott. Thanks, bro.
That's what I'm here for.
Great recap, bro.
Well, I was kind of doing something. I'm cleaning the kitchen or something.
I'm sorry. I got a life, man. I'm not going to watch this full show with my undivided
attention. Well, neither did I.
Hours.
I just happened to see something going on.
No, I know.
And I was like, oh, hey, well, what's this?
Listen, guys, I'm not judging you if you watch this straight through without going to the bathroom or eating ice cream or making
dinner.
You
did it without going to the bathroom. Bravo.
Yeah, I know, right? Jesus Christmas.
Although I think Elias does have one of the coolest shirts out there. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, you could be the five.
I'm not getting it. I'm just saying I think it's a cool shirt.
All right.
The Elias World Tour. Come on, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and he has one name, by the way, now. It's no longer Samson.
Not even the Drifter, just Elias.
So we had one of the greatest pre-show matches of all time. Personally, I still think the match I was live for at Money in the Bank 2013 in Philly was better, which, ironically enough, featured the Usos versus Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins for the tag titles. I have to go back and watch that match on YouTube to compare, but I think that was slightly better than this, but that's not saying much because Usos versus the New Day was an excellent, excellent tag team professional wrestling match. This is such an underrated feud. I saw Dylan Hale's tweet online earlier. He said that if this era wasn't the era of oversaturation, this would be considered one of the great rivalries of this generation. And from an in-ring standpoint, I totally agree. I think these guys have just had such great matches. They've had even better matches than they did in 2015. And the 2015 matches were pretty good. The Usos have reinvented themselves. The New Day managed to stay over and sell merch. And this is a great back-and-forth match. What can I say? So many near falls. Go out of your way to watch it. The Usos ended up getting the win with the double splash on Big E. 1-2-3. There was a scary point in the match where... Maybe I'm getting my tag team matches mixed up. I think it was this one. Where wasn't one of the New Day members launched or one of the Usos... No. One of the Usos was in the ring with one of the New Day members, and he threw him over the top rope. And then that New Day member landed on top of the other Uso on the floor, like right on his head.
Oh, yeah, it was supposed to be, like Jimmy was supposed to backflip Xavier Woods onto, who did I say? The one onto the other, and it was supposed to kind of be a Samoan drop.
Right.
But they kind of missed it, and Xavier just kind of fell.
Right on the guy's head. Thankfully, he seemed to be okay. No concussion or anything, thank God. So... Usos got the win with the double splash on Big E. This was a great match.
Now they're playing hot potato again with the tag titles.
Usos are over. Hopefully they'll have the belts for a while. We'll see what happens. But at that point, that was the best match of the night. I'd probably say up until the main event, that still might have been the best match of the night. We'll get through it. We'll see.
Both tag matches were pretty good.
I'll put this one over the other, but they're both great. John Cena versus Baron Corbin. This went about 10 minutes. John Cena won with the AA. This was nothing special at all. This was a great SmackDown match. This was a perfectly fine I don't even know if I want to go as far as saying this was a perfectly fine SmackDown main event match, because some of the SmackDown Live main events have been pretty good this year.
Yeah.
It's like a good SmackDown Live opening match.
Wow. Yeah, and hopefully he's not listening, but now we see why Baron Corbin keeps his shirt on.
Come on, Scott. We're one to talk about. I mean, granted, we're not professional wrestlers who have to look cosmetically good on TV, but I don't know. He did take off his shirt. I don't know if he was trying to make a point. Either way,
yeah, I think he was dismissed.
This is the worst week ever for Baron Corbin. He, or the last 2 weeks have been bad. Okay, let's recap. According to, I think it was the Observer that reported this, that he blocked multiple WWE officials for whatever reason, probably something petty, like online.
I did not know that.
Or like backstage. Yeah, allegedly did. I don't know if he actually did or not. I'm not going to go and check who Michael Hayes follows and doesn't follow. I got no time for that. And then he got into it with a military man on Twitter where he said he was a loser or something. And that military man happened to be a member, I think, of the Army. And he tweeted a picture of him posing with Vince McMahon and Mark Henry. So of all people that Baron Corbin, quote-unquote, burned on Twitter, it happened to be a man that WWE actually visited at his base. Hilarious. So Baron goes, oh, well, I respect your service, but I don't care about your opinion. He also, I think, went at Dave Meltzer and said his opinion's relevant or something. And then Dave ended up daving him, like he daves a lot of people on Twitter, essentially burning him to the ground. Burn it down, as Seth would say. And then he, this past Tuesday, cashes in his Money in the Bank and loses in seconds to Jinder Mahal after Cena distracted him. And but the week before that, John Cena called him skinny fat. And I'm sorry, last time I checked, say what you want about John Cena. Yeah, you brought up earlier, Scott, that back in the day, he didn't put over Nexus at SummerSlam 2010. That was a long time ago. John Cena's given a lot to a lot of young guys.
Sure.
So I think these days when he really cuts deep at you, it's either a challenge or it's a message. And Baron Corbin did not answer that challenge pretty well tonight.
The only thing about Corbin doing what he did, and I know what you're going to say here, is, but why can't a heel just be a heel? Like, why does every heel still have to be a good guy, outside of WWE?
I know doing what he did to
who he did it isn't right, but he's a heel. That's his gimmick.
I think one of the things is that, and I heard this in his Jericho interview, and he's very confident, and I think you need that kind of confidence to succeed in professional wrestling. But the feeling I get, and from people that covered the sport and everything, is like, he could have something, right? With a little tweaking, he could have something. But at least on the surface, he seems like a guy that thinks he's better than he is. And like, you listen to him in Jericho's interview, and he's, seems like a cool dude. He's very confident in himself. But has he really improved that much over the last year? I mean, he's improved, and I do think that WWE could have protected him over the last year more. I think he should have beaten Dean for the IC title at WrestleMania. I'm not the biggest fan of him, but if you're going to push him, I do believe in protecting a big guy like that. And they haven't done that at all. So that's not his fault. At the end of the day, I mean, you look around, man. He hasn't improved enough to the point where he's a main event guy.
No.
He doesn't have the promo ability or the facial expressions of a Jinder Mahal. The in-ring presence.
He needs a manager.
He needs a manager. He needs a makeover. And, I think maybe I got to believe there are some people backstage that are probably looking at this guy saying, all right, he's kind of a douche. Okay, he's trying to do this cute Twitter gimmick. And instead of being on Twitter, he should be improving in the ring. Whereas, Kevin Owens can get away with burning people on Twitter. He can even get away with blocking me on Twitter for no apparent reason. And by the way, he did block me on Twitter a year ago or two for no apparent reason. I don't know why.
Wow.
So, yeah, I feel quite bad about that. But
he does some. He has posted some good things. Yeah,
he does. But I'm saying, like, Kevin Owens is a great wrestler. Kevin Owens is one of the best wrestlers of this generation.
Sure.
Kevin Owens sells merchandise. He draws money. Okay. Kevin Owens is the man. And Kevin Owens never crosses the line. But Baron Corbin, maybe he crossed the line one too many times on Twitter. Maybe he didn't improve enough in the ring over the last year after being given chance after chance after chance, which I'm sure are chances that fans wish went to Sami Zayn and went to other guys. And so, for him to lose, and be the biggest loser over this last week, I don't really feel bad. And I kind of want to understand why Daddy B would give up on him, or at least like maybe put him through the ringer and see how he does. That being said, I think it was a complete waste for him to win the Money in the Bank in a hellacious match like that, where a bunch of guys risk life and limb, only to lose the briefcase on a random SmackDown. I think what
that
he should.
Fast.
I think, yeah. Even though I love that moment, I laughed my ass off. But how much better would it have been if the briefcase was on the line in this match and John Cena won? I think it would have been better. Just my humble opinion.
It would have given the match some meaning.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a basic match, but at least it would have had some meaning other than Corbin, the bum, just losing,
Oh, you know what else we forgot about on the pre-show?
What?
Shawn Michaels showed up.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the low point of Shawn Michaels' career. We had a bunch of KFC ads on this pay-per-view because KFC sponsored it. Damn capitalism. For all the people that are in favor of capitalism, all I got to say is just look at the Shawn Michaels entrance. Just look at Shawn Michaels' entrance, okay? Ryan Loco tweeted me earlier, okay? Years ago, Shawn Michaels could not be bothered to do a job. But 20 years later, here he is, doing his entrance, dressed as a male stripper version of Colonel Sanders.
No, Dolph Ziggler was a male stripper version of Colonel Sanders.
Whatever. This was the low point of Shawn Michaels' career. And dare I say, even with all the drugs and everything else, this might have been the low point of Shawn Michaels' life.
Money talks. It is what it is.
Stop it.
He doesn't care. He's, what, 47 years old? Who cares? He doesn't care.
It's the low point of his career.
Oh, it's not the
low point. The low point of his career. Low point of his career.
Yeah, it's definitely not the best moment.
Low point of his career. If you could think of a worse moment for Shawn Michaels in his career on camera, please bring it up because I don't have one.
You said on camera, otherwise I had one.
What?
Well, when he got beat up in Syracuse.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a low point just because of who he was at that time. True. Or when wasn't on camera.
Or when he was beat up by Bret Hart and had his hair pulled.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Low point of his career. We had Natalya beat Naomi via submission to win the WWE Women's Championship. No cash-in by
Carmella.
I was
surprised at that finish, too.
Yeah, just clean in the middle of the ring. Most likely going to play into Total Divas. Natalya definitely earned it. I know a lot of people aren't Natalya. Well, some people aren't Natalya fans. They say she's boring or this and that. I think she's a great wrestler. I've always liked her. If you follow her on social media and Total Divas, there's a reason she's in this spot. And there's a reason she's been on Total Divas since the beginning. Because obviously, she's got a gigantic fan base and she connects. So maybe she doesn't connect as a heel. I prefer her as a babyface. But
yeah,
good for her. She got the win. I thought they were going to do the thing where they finally give Natalya a title win after 7 years. And what happens? Carmella's going to cash in, right? Thankfully, that didn't happen. So, good for Natalya. Happy she got the win. And I thought Naomi did a great job, too, of having tears of sadness, just crying on cue. I think a part of her maybe actually cried because she was happy for Natalya. Because they've been friends for a long time and Total Divas castmates for a long time. And to see Natalya finally get that win you think about all the years Natalya was booked as the second or third banana. She had the farting gimmick. She was in love with Great Khali. Just all these stupid storylines. And finally, she is the alpha female. It's great. Great to see.
Well, I could see a title switch on Tuesday.
I could, but you know what? At least she gets to keep it for more than a few minutes.
We'll see if the belt's still glowing or not. And then, actually, I think that'd be kind of cool if she came out with the belt glowing just to rub it in.
Exactly.
Naomi's face. That'd be kind of cool.
We had Randy Orton beat Rusev in approximately 10 seconds.
Was that the third? That wasn't the third match, was it?
That was the... Oh, no, I skipped over. We'll go back to that match.
But yeah, I missed it. I missed the whole thing.
Okay, Rusev attacked Randy Orton when he was coming out. Just beat the hell out of him. Match didn't officially start.
I did see the nasty RKO.
Yeah, and then as the bell rung, Orton, I think, moved out of the way or kicked him. Hit an awesome RKO. Rusev just took this amazingly. He did, it was almost, I don't know how to describe it. It was like
his head hit and then his body hit about 10 seconds later.
It was more like he spiked his head with an RKO and then his body came down slowly after. It looked brutal. So that looked great. But the problem is Rusev was a great pro wrestler. Another guy, much like Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, a dude who he's been at it for a few years now, but even going back, 3 years ago when he got called up, way better than he should be for his experience level.
Yep.
Awesome worker, great personality, good on the mic, and I don't even think English isn't even his first language. He's awesome on the mic. And what happens? Loses in 10 seconds to Randy.
It's the curse of John Cena.
What's the curse of John Cena?
Oh, he was unstoppable. He lost to John Cena, and now look at him. The Nexus, they were unstoppable.
True,
they
but
lost
you know
to John
what?
Cena. And
yeah, but you know who else lost to John Cena and was okay?
AJ Styles.
AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, a lot of guys. I know you mean.
Okay, they're not homegrown guys. How about that?
Yeah.
They were already established guys. Is that a better way to say it?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think that makes more sense. It was brutal. I feel bad for Rusev. I don't know. Speaking of Twitter, I don't know if this has anything to do with Twitter because Rusev pulled the LeVar Ball and insulted a woman on Twitter. He quoted her and said, I think, stay out of this lady. But do you know who he tweet quoted and insulted on Twitter? Granted, in character.
I do not.
Randy Orton's wife.
Did he really?
Yeah. He just said, stay out of this lady, because she tweeted support for Randy.
Well, do you think when they do that, it's part of the gimmick or something?
I would think that's part of the gimmick. And Rusev is a well-liked guy backstage. But either they think so little of Rusev's character at this point, or they're clueless, or maybe it's a combination of both, or they saw this and they said, oh, really? Okay. Well, let's see how you like to tweet now. I don't know. You never know with Vince McMahon. You never know. All I know is I wouldn't go at Randy Orton's wife even if I was joking. Unless I'm really tight with Randy Orton. Like, I'm really, really tight with Randy Orton. I don't think I'd go at his wife in character.
Well, I don't think I'd go after anybody's wife in character.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. I remember a few years ago, Ryback went at Cena's ex-wife in the middle of their divorce in character on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, that didn't end well for Ryback. We had Big Cass beat Big Show. I wish this match lasted 10 seconds instead of lasted 10 minutes.
The ending made no sense.
Do you want to recap this, Scott? I don't care for it.
Okay, Enzo Amore's in a shark cage. He strips down, greases himself up, and becomes the weirdest cage dancer ever. Escape comes down from the cage, takes a big boot. Then Cass decides to give the big boot to the Big Show, who kicks out. He gets up, gives him another big boot. Gives him the Empire All. Pins him. Match over. Crowd was chanting boring. The end. Next match.
Yeah, you kind of cut out a little bit there, but I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that was pretty much everything.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, Enzo cut a promo that went about 5 minutes too long at the beginning, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean...
It was cool to see Enzo get out of that thing, I guess.
Yeah, he put baby oil and got out of the cage, but then Cass just booted him, making him the smallest loser. If Baron Corbin's biggest loser, he's the smallest loser. And then Cass just hit the big boot. Shades of Andrew Tess Martin. Pinned Big Show 1-2-3, but God rest Tess's soul. I don't want to insult Tess, because I think at one point in his career, Tess actually had something. Whereas, I don't see anything in Cass. Now, to be fair to Big Cass, maybe we should keep him as far away from Enzo Amore as possible going forward before we totally write him off. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I think after tonight, that's what we're going to see. If they do a shakeup again, I think he'd be going on SmackDown. I think that would help him.
With his girlfriend, Carmella?
Yeah, I mean, although it would be kind of awkward for Ellsworth, but it would still be kind of funny.
Well, that's how you turn an Ellsworth babyface.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they got to do something with him. I think Raw has too many big guys. I know SmackDown has, you know, Corbin is a big guy and whatever, but, you know, I think he needs to go to SmackDown. I think it would just help him out overall. Yeah. Although, truthfully, I think he needs to go to NXT and work on a singles character, but, you know, one step at a time.
Yeah, I would actually like to see them send some more Daddy B guys, main roster guys, to NXT. I mean, OVW did it back in the day. I think they did an FCW every now and then. HWA did it. Like, all the developmental territories in Daddy B pre-NXT did it. Hell, NXT even did it, if you remember, Tyson Kidd. You know, he rehabbed his whole career in NXT.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Cesaro kind of did too a little bit.
Yeah, with the Sami Zayn series of matches.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep.
We had Sasha Banks beat Alexa Bliss via submission to win the Raw Women's Championship for the fourth time. Sasha actually wins in a title match on a pay-per-view, although she has yet to make one successful title defense in her career on the main roster, which is crazy to think about.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty good match, but very awkward finish. It kind of came out of nowhere. Sasha had her arm worked on throughout the match. Alexa was really relentless. I feel bad for Bayley. She got booed at TakeOver. She got booed backstage when Sasha gave her a hug. I thought there could have been a chance that maybe Bayley's injury turned out to be a work, and maybe or maybe healed quicker than expected, and maybe Bayley would interfere and cost Sasha the championship.
Well, I was waiting to see Bayley come out at the end and do that, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe inadvertently cost Sasha the championship. But no, instead, Alexa Bliss got locked in with the bank statement. Sasha wouldn't let go. What happened? She locked it in at first. Alexa was able to wring the arm and escape, but then Sasha locked it in again. Alexa taps out, and Sasha is your new women's champion.
It was a good match.
I liked the match, but I expected more from two people that have real-life animosity. I thought it could have been better. Something was missing, I think.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, you know, it was the best they could do, I guess, for what they had. But it was a decent match. Yeah, kind of a surprise finish. But in a way, that's kind of a good thing, isn't it? Yeah. You don't just get the generic, oh, here's my finish, the end. So no, in a way, right. It was okay. It was like, oh, wow, she tapped out. Like, that's different.
True that. We had the return of the Demon King, Finn Balor, which they idiotically advertised ahead of time. I wish they would...
This was like the stripped down version of it, though.
Yeah, I wish they would have just freaking hinted at it. Like he said, Finn Balor said on Monday, "I'm gonna bring the demon." Whatever he said. He said like, "I'm gonna bring the demon," or "I have a demon too," or something.
Okay? Something to the effect of, "Yeah, Bray has his demons, and so do I." Or
yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's all you need. But no, they actually had to show a graphic saying the Demon King Finn Balor's coming back. Because you have to spell everything out for the audience. You can't let the audience think for themselves. Jeez, man. Yeah, you know what's funny? They spell out so many things for their audience as if their audience is full of idiots sometimes.
Yeah.
But you look at Game of Thrones and you look at like recent shows like The Ozark on Netflix and some other stuff. And all those shows get you thinking. All those shows have their own fan theories and everything else like that. And they're the most popular shows and do significantly more viewers and ad revenue than WWE. Don't you think it'd be nice to have WWE make a storyline where fans can kind of think for themselves? Without overcomplicating it. I know that at times they've overcomplicated things. The greatest example of that being that they were trying to figure out who John Laurinaitis was affiliated with. And it turns out Kevin Nash stole his phone and texted himself or something. If you remember that horrible storyline from back in the day. Or maybe it was Triple H. I don't know.
Please stop. Just stop.
I will stop. Avoid late 2011 Raws if you are binging them on WWE Network. That's all I got to say. We had Finn Balor as the demon beat Bray Wyatt. Cool entrance and everything.
But it was like half the entrance, it seemed like. I don't know. Seemed like something was missing.
You know what? Well, he didn't have the chainsaw like he did in London. He didn't have like the cage like he did in one of those. He always had like a theme every time he was in like a new city for NXT TakeOver. And he didn't really have a theme here. It was just kind of the old school demon. It was cool. But I didn't like the fact that this match went 13 minutes. I think it would have been a lot better.
Wow.
Or like 10, was it like 13 or 10 minutes?
I'll check it out.
It felt like it was a while. I think this should have been a squash match. I know Bray Wyatt's Bray Wyatt, and they love Bray and everything, but this guy really needs to be repackaged. He needs to cut off the white man dreads. He needs to trim the beard a little bit. He needs to find a greater purpose. I don't know what he needs. You know what he needs? And, man, it's a shame Paul Bearer passed away all these years ago. He needs like a guy like a Paul Bearer to slap some sense in him and get him in focused.
Yeah, the match went 10 and a half minutes.
10 and a half minutes.
But you know what's funny, though, with Bray is he gets these odd wins. Like, he beat Balor for no apparent reason.
He beat
Seth twice. Yeah, and the only reason is they have no other heels to compete with anybody. Like, I mean, Braun's like a heel, but he's not really a heel.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all they have. But you were saying that you need a Paul Bearer for Bray. Well, in my opinion, you need like a Paul Ellering for Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Yeah.
Actually,
put him on a motorcycle, call him like the Sons of DOA. Why not?
Okay. Now you're bringing up some random attitude or gimmicks. But you know what, though? I'd say this, a motorcycle would add something to
Corbin's
personality. It'd add more to nothing. I'll say that.
It would.
We had Ambrose and Rollins take on Cesaro and Sheamus. This was a great match for the Raw tag titles. I forgot how crazy of a finish sequence Shield matches can have, man. This was just insane. If I recall correctly, Seth hit like a hurricanrana on Sheamus, right off the top, and Sheamus flew into Cesaro, and then Cesaro got hit with the dirty deeds.
Not exactly. Yeah, they were setting up Ambrose for something. Sheamus was sitting on the top rope. Seth came from the outside, springboard, did the hurricanrana. Even though Cesaro didn't flip, he kind of just dove into Sheamus. Seth then hit his finisher, I forget what he calls it.
The knee. Yeah, the knee.
And then
more or less Omega's V-trigger, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So he hit that, and then Dirty Deeds, and then the pin. That was a good match.
Yeah, I really liked
it. It was fun.
I would have actually liked to have seen Sheamus and Cesaro retain and then do the title change the next month.
Yeah, but how many times do you do that, you know?
Yeah, that's true, but they're going to do a rematch anyway.
Of course.
We'll see, but I'll say this. Cesaro, an extremely underrated tag team wrestler. Sheamus as well. They've been a great tag team over this last year, for sure. And actually, speaking of V-trigger knees, that is the, other than the crazy bumps, that is the one complaint I have for about Kenny Omega, who's one of the best wrestlers in the world. I feel like that knee, it's one thing to do a super kick a million times. I think we're kind of used to seeing that. But when you knee somebody in the face ridiculously hard, I do think that should be a finish after like the third one. So that's my only complaint about Kenny Omega and his offense. But it looks cool. It looks cool. And Seth does it very well. But I think Kenny Omega does a little bit better.
A little bit.
Yeah. We had AJ Styles beat Kevin Owens to retain the U.S. title. This was the best match of their series. Although I didn't like tough guy Shane pushing AJ when AJ accidentally hit him. The finish came when AJ
pushed down wins. Yeah.
The finish came when AJ hit a phenomenal forearm and then hit the Styles Clash on Owens to get the pin. Before that, he had made Owens tap out when Shane was knocked out.
Well, and AJ, before that, Owens pinned AJ, even though AJ had his foot on the rope.
Oh, yeah, with the pop-up powerbomb.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't know where Kevin Owens goes from here. I mean, I guess he'll...
Shane McMahon, I guess,
God. After that, where does he go? I don't know. I mean, I'd like...
I mean, I could see him challenging for the WWE title.
After losing for the U.S. title?
I know what you're going to say. He's going to go with Sami Zayn and the mixed tag team, like the awkward tag team thing, but I don't know. Maybe? I mean, can you turn him babyface on SmackDown?
You probably could. I'm sure
you could. Yeah, Nakamura, AJ, Owen. Yeah, I guess.
Somebody's
going to have to kind of replace Cena, and yeah. I know it sounds weird, but...
Well, I think Nakamura is the one that's supposed to replace Cena, and we'll see, because we had a weird finish... In the next match, this match went 11 minutes. It was a world title match. We had Lee England Jr., the violinist, in Shinsuke Nakamura gear, do the violin entrance for Nakamura. By the way, Seth had red pants similar to Nakamura. I thought that was a fashion faux pas, in my opinion.
Well, yeah.
Consecutive matches with two dudes in bright red pants? That's Nakamura's thing. Come on.
He takes
one of Kenny Omega's finishers. Yeah. He previously had Triple H's finisher. And now he's having Nakamura's red pants. Come on, Seth.
He's trying to get all the Power Rangers in. Leave him alone.
Come on, Seth. Okay, you know what Seth needs to do? He needs to go back to his offense and the stuff that he took from Nakamura and Kenny Omega. As his theme song says, he needs to burn it down.
Oh God.
Yeah, that's so great. I just love that for years he had no lyrics in his theme song, and finally he gets lyrics and it's just one line.
And it's an arsonist line at that. So.
Exactly. Why don't I have a real lyrics? Whatever. So, Jinder Mahal versus Shinsuke Nakamura. This was an okay match, not a great match. Yeah. I'd say it was a decent match, a well-worked match. Not at the level of a pay-per-view main event, that's for sure.
The shame of it is, it was more like filler for the main event, and that's kind of sad.
Right. And Nakamura was going for the Kinshasa. The Singh brothers went in the ring. In the ring, not a disqualification, not outside the ring.
It's the Lex Luger finish from 20 years ago.
In the ring. So Nakamura kicks one in the head, knees another, and then Jinder Mahal hits the Colossus, the most awkward-looking Cobra Clutch Slam of his career. He just, he couldn't get all of them. Honestly, I would have liked it if he hit it again. But he had a sloppy version of his Cobra Clutch finishing maneuver. Threw Nakamura down. It looked unspectacular. He covered him one, two, three. And I sat there going, seriously? Nakamura loses to Jinder Mahal via the same exact finish that Jinder had in almost every one of his matches with Randy Orton and other dudes. Like, come on.
Here's the good thing about it. Was a guy did not kick out of a finisher. So that's kind of good.
True.
This is Nakamura's first TV loss too, correct?
Yes.
And his first WWE main roster loss was to who? Jinder Mahal. So
true.
Interesting.
True. As long as the end destination is him winning the title, and maybe they'll do that at the next SmackDown pay per view.
I would hope.
But that
gets back to my point of why not do it on the big pay per view? It just kind of, I don't know.
You know what? Maybe they'll actually do it on Tuesday.
Ooh.
Because I don't know if you know this, reportedly, and as I reportedly, I see the ads all over New York TV here. Okay. SummerSlam wasn't sold out. It might have been as close to a sellout as possible.
Right. Neither is Raw and SmackDown.
But NXT definitely wasn't sold out. Raw and SmackDown, as of right now, are not sold out. Who's to say that WWE says, you know what? If we're going to continue to do this whole thing in Brooklyn where it's four straight nights and we're losing attendance, why not book Nakamura versus Jinder? Why not have Nakamura pin him in Brooklyn to win the title? And that way, it trains fans who maybe were in town for one event but not all the others, or fans that weren't in attendance that thought about going. Maybe it trains fans to think, you know what? Crap. I got to go to all these shows.
Well, if they're smart, they would do. If they're smart, they would actually kind of reverse what they usually do. And Raw is usually the big show, and SmackDown's kind of like the end show.
Yeah.
They need to reverse that because, like you just said, it would make more sense. I'm shocked to hear you say NXT was not sold out.
Yeah, it was not. The upper deck was like
pretty.
The upper deck was tapered off. It was not sold out at all. It was a hot crowd.
No kidding.
It was a great crowd. There's still a lot of full seats, but there were a lot of empty seats too, like further up. It definitely was not.
It's tough. You know, it's expensive if you have four nights there. I mean, you have to pick and choose. This stuff is not cheap.
I agree.
And they don't sell packages that would give you a discount either, and that's the problem.
Yeah,
it's in New York, where a hotel room is not the cheapest thing to get.
Even Airbnb is not that cheap, depending on where you go, and that's a hit or miss depending on that. Right. So yeah, that is true. That is true, and not everybody's gonna know about. And you know, even a hotel like in North Jersey, like right by the city, like how many people are gonna be familiar with the PATH train and the subway and, you know, the bus, all that stuff? Like it's
even Long Island would be a little bit cheaper. Even hell, if you drove, even Connecticut wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, but how many people that are coming from, say, like UK or Ireland are going to
know? That's what I mean. You're not going to...
You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, Long Island, it depends. But yeah, not
I'm just saying, if you're not from...
I know what you're saying.
I'm just saying, we're from the area. We know our way around and how to get where and what. But somebody that's coming from not New York City, you know what I mean, is going to be a little intimidated, right?
Absolutely.
You know, they're going to want to be as accessible as possible. And yeah, you're right. That does cost a lot of money. So hopefully, now that Barclays is going to be the host of SummerSlam festivities again next year, they can kind of take care of that and, you know, maybe try to be a little bit more accommodating for the fans in terms of, you know, all four events. We'll see.
But you know what? I'll say this. Even if SmackDown's not sold out, you're still going to get a better crowd than you probably would if you put it in, you know, insert city here for SmackDown Live.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sure it'll be a very hot crowd. And then in our main event, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Brock Lesnar retained the title over Roman Reigns, Samoa Joe, and Braun Strowman. This was, again, an excellent match. Everybody got their shine here, but Braun Strowman was definitely the MVP. And I do expect, given how much Braun Strowman wreaked havoc in this match, that we're going to get Braun versus Brock at No Mercy, which is, I think, yeah, it's next month.
Yes, No Mercy, yep.
And
24th.
I would really like to see Braun get the title. I'm not a fan of these quick hot potato title changes. But honestly, for the sake of credibility, I think there are times where even if a guy holds a title for a brief period, it can really elevate them. And in this case, I feel like Braun Strowman beating Brock Lesnar, I think that not only would elevate him, but even if he had a short title run, I don't think it would hurt him at all. Because it's perfectly believable that in a one-on-one match that could go either way. Given how protected these guys are, how badass these guys are in the ring. So actually, that's what I would like to do. I would like to see Braun pin Brock at the next pay-per-view, win the title. You need a big draw for Hell in a Cell. You need a match at Hell in a Cell that actually belongs in Hell in a Cell. I hate the Hell in a Cell pay-per-views where you know, they put matches in there just because it's a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Like, for example, a couple years ago when they did Undertaker and Brock, while I would have preferred that at WrestleMania, you know what? It made sense for two bitter blood rivals to be in that cell. It made perfect sense, right?
Absolutely.
So you know what? Braun versus Brock, that makes perfect sense for Hell in a Cell. So that's what I would do. Do Brock versus Braun at No Mercy. Braun wins. Hell in a Cell. The only thing is, I don't know what the hell you do for Survivor Series. I mean, I guess you could put Lesnar in a multi-man match and make the WWE Championship the main event, but I think it all depends on who's the WWE champion by then. I mean, if it's Jinder Mahal, I think it's a tough sell. If it's Shinsuke and maybe like John Cena, I'd say that's a better top billing. But you're going to need something because
Cena's going to Raw, so you don't get that. But
he's appearing on Raw. He's reportedly appearing on Raw tomorrow night, but that doesn't mean he he's going to stay on the Raw brand. There's still a lot of flexibility. A lot of things can happen.
But
so, what do you do? Because
I mean, as funny as it sounds, do you even have to have Brock at Survivor Series, even if he's the champion? I know it's the big four again, but
you don't, but I'm trying to think of when the last time they didn't have the WWE champion at Survivor Series. I think the last time Brock held the title, which was 2014.
I think that's what I was going to say.
But you had the caveat of Authority versus Team Cena.
Big Show. No, you know what? He wrestled Big Show.
Did he? No. He wrestled...
Yeah, Big Show. He beat him up with the chair, didn't he?
No, that was Royal Rumble 2015.
Ooh, gosh.
Yeah, 2014, they at least had the caveat of
Sting.
Of the Sting debuting, and also the Team Raw, Cena versus the Team Authority, where Authority lost, they got fired. Which, of course, they magically were fired for only 2 weeks. But whatever, at least you had that draw. And that pay-per-view back then did actually surprisingly well on regular pay-per-view. The next year, 2015, you had the vacant WWE Championship Tournament where Roman Reigns, beat Dean.
He beat Dean.
Sheamus cashed in. And then last year, you had Goldberg and Brock, which was just, it was a spectacle, and it was great.
That's cool.
So, I think...
But you still had the title, Matt. You still had the champion on the card.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So
right. You don't necessarily have to have the champion main event, but...
You know what? Because they have two titles now. Maybe you can get away with Brock not being on there.
Oh, Fred.
What?
You know what they could do.
What?
You're not going to like this.
All right, but shoot.
Who was rumored supposed to be in New York City this weekend, tonight?
Undertaker, because he was seen on a flight.
And couldn't you do him and Roman at Survivor Series as my wife walks down the stairs and makes a lot of noise?
Oh, my God. Wait, really? Well, you know what? You could do Roman and Undertaker... And even though I think the perfect send-off was WrestleMania, maybe, if you want to try to drag Undertaker's carcass one more time for one more match, you could do it on his 27th anniversary? I guess you could do that. But I don't like that. Or Roman or Undertaker versus somebody else for the title. I don't know. I don't want to. You could do that, Scott. It is in Texas. Undertaker's a Texas native. Maybe he wants to retire in his home state. But I don't want to do that.
I'm sorry. She's critiquing my cool Sasha Banks sunglasses.
The background looks good. With the glasses.
You hear this? She says they're our daughters.
Yeah.
But I had to wear them.
Yeah. Sure, Scott. They're your daughters. So overall,
they're my daughters. Yeah.
Oh my God. Overall, I'd give your wife's co-hosting performance a thumbs up compared to you, and I would give SummerSlam because of the great main event, because most of the matches were at least pretty good. I would give SummerSlam a thumbs up, and the fact that hey April, and the fact that it ended on time is great. Hey Mrs. Anderson, doing great. Congratulations. And Scott, I think you muted yourself there.
I muted myself on purpose.
Okay, well I don't know.
Sorry.
I
had it muted anyway for sound and different things, and she came over and then I was still on mute. Yeah, I had to.
All good.
She made fun of my outfit. I had to say something to her. Yeah, I had to put her in her place. You know what I'm saying?
I think it was the
bad
other way.
Bad timing.
I think it was the other way around. Overall, thumbs up for your wife as the co-host, and thumbs up to SummerSlam. I'm going to go over a little bit of what I experienced in NXT, but before I do, we got a ton of comments here on YouTube. I want to get to them and on Twitter.
It's all about
on Facebook.
My glasses, isn't it? No.
All right, so let's get some of the comments and questions here. Mr. Racer 1029 says... The main event of SummerSlam was the best match of the year in WWE. I agree. Talvin Kupapa says, well, I guess Lesnar ain't leaving for UFC. No, he still could, but you got to remember, if he were to fight Jon Jones, he wouldn't be able to fight until next year anyway with that whole USADA suspension and getting relicensed. So never say never with Brock Lesnar. He could still make a lot of money in the UFC, and UFC still needs big stars after Conor McGregor and after Ronda Rousey because reportedly she's training for professional wrestling.
It could just be one match, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And also, I could see Ronda Rousey working a couple matches, either against Charlotte or Stephanie McMahon. Cool. I don't want to see her against Stephanie McMahon, but she could. And I could see if Shayna Baszler gets signed from the Mae Young Classic, since they're best friends and part of the Four Horsewomen, the original Four Horsewomen, before WWE stole their nickname. I could maybe see... you know what? Maybe that's the draw for Survivor Series, Ronda Rousey.
And the Four Horsewomen. You mean like the Four Horsewomen versus the Four Horsewomen?
Yeah, why not?
That would be...
And it's a good, and it'd be a way to protect Rousey too, where she doesn't have to do much in the ring, and she just tap one of them out, and probably Bayley.
That'd be a hell of a spectacle.
I wouldn't care too much for it, but I know a lot of fans would.
So. It would be mainstream.
Absolutely.
But they have to main event it.
And no, I don't think they have to. It could be like the second to last match.
You think?
Yeah, I think it could. As long as you have like a good, like strong main event, or at least, I don't know. You could have something. We'll see. Jeremy Bauer says Jinder needs a new finisher badly. I don't know if he needs it badly, but it is the same finisher that Billy Gunn once had. So maybe you don't want to have the same finisher as Billy Gunn.
Billy Gunn's still going semi strong into his 50s.
Yeah, I get.
Well, I mean, semi mildly strong.
He looks better than he wrestles at this point. I'll say that. TK says Nakamura will be back. Now Corbin, on the other hand, is done for the year. I guess we'll see on SmackDown. Dan Bones, I don't know if he's serious or not, says Jinder saved the show. Nakamura and Jinder saved the show. And Jinder is going all the way.
Well, Mr. Racer also, I believe, said that Jinder's the best champion in WWE currently. Of course, behind Randy Orton, who he still thinks is WWE champion, which is a whole nother story.
Yeah, well.
So. Yeah. Real quick, do you think Nakamura losing is like punishment for him dropping Cena on his head?
No.
Because that whole reported backstage thing of Vince going crazy at that?
I'm sure Vince was pissed, but you know, anybody, I'm sure he would have been pissed at anybody for dropping his meal ticket on the head. No, I think...
Meal ticket 15 years later isn't really the meal ticket. It's kind of a stale meal, isn't it? He's still a draw.
He's still the biggest draw in the company. He's still the biggest star in the company. I don't think so. Yeah. I think, you know what? I mean, I think it's just the, how they book. I mean,
it's
look.
It's the plan for another
look,
day.
Look, Jinder lost randomly to Randy Orton a couple weeks ago.
I know.
And that used to be the MO for WWE booking. If the champion loses before the pay-per-view in a singles match, chances are he's going to retain.
That's true. Yeah, but, well, yeah.
That was random as hell, too. I still don't understand why he lost to Orton, but maybe they'll do a triple threat at the next pay-per-view, because that's just we need a multi-man match, Scott, at the next SmackDown pay-per-view.
We need Bobby Roode versus Randy Orton, man. We need it.
We do. We need to see who becomes Triple H's son.
That might be the most boringest match of the year. It'd probably be one of the best technical matches, but it would be a boring match.
No, it'd just be a boring match. The best technical match would be, like, Zack Sabre Jr. and like Daniel Bryan when he's finally off of his WWE deal. That would be like the best technical match.
But the match would be glorious.
I'll get to that in a sec. JB says Cesaro deserves a title run for ripping up that beach ball. That's right. In the middle of the match, Cesaro went into the crowd, took the beach ball, which by the way is illegal per Barclays Center standards and rules, and he ripped up the beach ball because he is a man.
What's more amazing is that the camera followed Cesaro to do that, almost kind of like what the hell was going on here.
Yeah. Very random.
Could have been interesting.
I saw somebody tweet this. It was Jonathan Snowden. He said that 20 years from now, we're going to look back and think what could have been of Cesaro, because that guy is such a great performer, and while he's a great tag team wrestler and makes the most out of every opportunity, I will say this, by the high standards of Cesaro's great wrestling, the man belongs in the main event picture. But I'm sure some fans are going to complain and say, well, at least he's on TV every week. At least he had gold and blah, blah. That's right. But he is a great professional wrestler who can get over as a babyface and a heel and have great matches with almost anybody. So excuse me if I'd like to see him in a higher position.
I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
Whatever.
I was going to say, according to John Cena, he has big nipples, but that's beside the point.
There's been worse detriments when it comes to WWE top guys, Scott.
Hey, I'm just, look, it's been 6.5 hours and, I had some Steve Weisers and,
You're a little tired.
I'm good. It's good. I'm good. I'm good. It's kind of why I'm keeping the glasses on, but I'm
all
good.
All right. Do you think AJ's asking, do you think Sheamus and Cesaro will split up tomorrow? God, I hope not.
No.
I don't think so, and I hope. I really hope not. And
no, I hope
they need
not
heel either. Tag teams anyway, because the Revival's injured. Dawson has that biceps injury, unfortunately.
They're in trouble, I think, as a team too. They're in trouble because they're injury prone, and that doesn't go very well. You can't trust guys who get hurt.
JB says after tonight, I think that Angle's going to disown Jason Jordan for losing.
Well, he did kind of, if you remember when Daniel Bryan and we actually forgot about that, the Daniel Bryan Kurt Angle backstage segment. And, Daniel Bryan did say, you got to see your son well. So Kurt's like, losing makes you stronger or something to that effect. And then they did the great yes and no thing. And that was kind of that. Yeah.
A hilarious in a cringy way.
Like yes.
Two dads arguing.
It really was. Yeah. And it really is. So
Nakamura should go to Raw and beat Lesnar for Universal title.
No.
He lost to Jinder Mahal. I don't think he could believably beat Lesnar right now.
But But it wasn't clean-ish. So, I mean, it was, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
No, Nakamura and AJ have to stay on SmackDown. They have to.
Yeah, JB says, give us the stable of Reigns and AOP. Thank you. Somebody agrees with me here. That'd be great. And I don't think AOP should have lost on Saturday. Okay.
Well, it's okay for what they did.
Yeah.
For the way they did it, I think it was fine. And we could talk about that if you wanted
Jeremy
to.
Also,
that was
just amazing. Jeremy also says, I think we're getting call-ups of Bobby Roode, the iconic duo AOP and Hideo Itami. I don't know about
now, wait a minute. He also said Mandy Rhodes on a tweet, and I don't know why he
Mandy
didn't
Rose?
Mention that tonight.
No, Mandy, yeah, Rose, Mandy Rose, I think Mandy Rose is going to get called up full-time to be on TV for NXT because she's got a ton of potential, but I don't see her her in the main roster yet. She's way too green. She's gorgeous, and she's going to be a star, but not
well, she's going to be a total diva star for sure, mm-hmm. but yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Let's see. Bowen Bradley or Badley says, honestly, didn't remotely care for the Cena match. You're not the only one. Terrell Scott says, remember when Shawn Michaels lost his smile? That was not a low point for Shawn Michaels. He got paid and didn't have to do the job. And 20 years later, he's jobbing to Colonel Sanders' almighty dollar. Embarrassing. Big Cass got the win over Big Show. I wish he was in the NBA. He could have been a solid center for the Cavs and Warriors. Russ Broski, well, I know Big Cass is a big guy and did play basketball, but I think he would have had the career trajectory of Michael Olowokandi.
Well, let's keep in mind that when you're 7 foot tall and you can teach that and you stand next to Aaron Judge of the Yankees, who's 6'8", and you're shorter than him, you're not really 7 feet tall.
Right. Right, we let's see, Big Cass versus LeVar Ball. Scott, I want you to answer this one.
No, NASCAR reference, and if Alan Wu is out there listening, he'll get this. It should be Kyle Busch versus LeVar Ball.
Yeah.
You're not a NASCAR guy, but Kyle Busch is the LeVar Ball of NASCAR, and Alan will definitely agree with me.
All right.
But I would like to see LeVar Ball get speared by like Roman Reigns. I think that'd be pretty. Cool.
That would be pretty. Hilarious.
That might get Roman over.
That might. Terrell Scott brings up the fact that we forgot to mention before Finn came out, somebody was singing "He's Got the Whole World in His Hands." Yes. Vanessa Bray. That was pretty cool.
That was really cool. Yes.
Jinder, one of the worst Cobra Clutch Slam ever. Agreed. JB says Knock wins the title at Hell in a Cell. Is that a SmackDown pay per view?
Has to be. No. What's the September? Is there a September SmackDown pay-per-view?
You know what? I'm going to look at the...
Because they didn't announce it. I think they had... I don't know.
You know what? Let me look at the schedule.
I don't think there's two pay-per-views the next 2 months. I think it's just one and one. Oh, no, that can't be right. Because
No Mercy. Whoa, I got an ad playing in the background. No Mercy is Raw.
Right. Which is the end of September.
Yeah.
And that was the next pay-per-view they announced.
Yeah, WWE pay-per-view schedule. Let's try this again with no ad playing in the background. Okay. List of pay-per-view events, 2017. Upcoming pay-per-view events. Raw is No Mercy, September 24th. Hell in a Cell is October 8th. That's Oh, that is SmackDown. I'm sorry.
2 weeks later, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So hang on. So maybe they won't do Braun versus... So I guess they can't do Braun versus... Lesnar.
It's WWE. They can do whatever they want.
They
but
oh, but you know what? They could do later in the month. I think this is overkill for October. There's a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view at the beginning of the month, which is...
Well, that's only because SmackDown. They're not doing the SmackDown one in September, so it's every 2 weeks.
No, but still, it's overkill. Get this, right? Hell in a Cell, October 8th. October 22nd is TLC for Raw.
Yeah, and there's this great American whose birthday is October 22nd.
Who?
Me.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Happy birthday, Scott, 2 months early.
38 years old. Gosh. Oh, man.
Yeah, old man.
So that's you said that's what, TLC?
TLC, so maybe they could do a TLC match with Lesnar and Strowman then.
So they took TLC from December and took Clash of the Champions and moved Clash of the Champions to December.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So then you get two Raw pay-per-views, one SmackDown pay-per-view, and Survivor Series.
Yeah, November 19th and then December 17th is Clash of
that's
Champions.
That's overkill. That's too many. Yeah.
Yeah. Not even that. Just the fact that you're having all these gimmick matches in like
a. No, wait a minute. Hold on. You said December's Clash of Champions. So SmackDown only has one standalone pay per view the rest of the year?
Well, no, it's not determined yet. According to Wikipedia, it's not determined yet. So.
That's interesting. Really? I think it would only be one until. Well, now they're doing in February. Wow.
Maybe, yeah. Who knows?
Honestly, that'd be good though, I think, for that brand.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so far though, the dual brand, the separate pay per views haven't exactly brought more subscribers.
Well, they're not very. I mean, they're decent matches, but there's nothing great.
Yeah,
to them.
They haven't. They're increasing costs, but they haven't increased subscribers. So maybe you kill them.
I mean, it's just it's more the same matches. Mm-hmm. It's oversaturation. So yeah,
I agree. Okay, let's get some more comments here. Jamil says Hell in a Cell is SmackDown. My bad. Jeremy says Cena versus Joe at No Mercy. I could get used to that. How was the crowd from the beginning of the pre-show near zero? Barclays doors opened a little late. Yeah, they took a while. Mr. Racer says, Fred, I'm going to Raw on September 25th, which is the Raw after No Mercy. Cool, hope you have fun.
Should be a good show.
Yeah, let's see. I know we got a few tweets from Jeremy here. Let me read. Actually, I got a DM as well on Facebook. Let's see what this question is. Do you see Adam Cole being on the main roster anytime soon? No, I think he's going to get his run in NXT. Okay.
Maybe next year at this time.
Doc Buckness says regarding NXT, I think we get either Drew versus Cole, Drew McIntyre versus Adam Cole, or McIntyre versus Cole versus Roderick Strong at the next TakeOver. And I think they should send Mike and Maria down to NXT. I could see that because I think Mike does not look the same physically as he did before he got to WWE. He may not be taking some of the same supplements he did in TNA, which is fine. But if they have nothing to do with him, if they don't know what to do with him, you might as well send him to NXT and let him find his character and everything. And Scott, while I drink some water because I'm starting to lose my voice here, do you want to tell me what you thought about NXT TakeOver from a viewer's perspective at home?
From a viewer's perspective at home, yeah. I thought it was a phenomenal show. I think that I tweeted last night, and I'll paraphrase myself, that anybody who thought NXT was in a down period needs to watch that because it was freaking amazing. You were there live. I'm sure it was just as good. I'm sure however many thousands of people did not go live or upset that they did not. There were some things on TV that, you know, I don't have my notes with me, but I as great as it was to hear Jim Ross and Moro announced together, I think it was a little bit off. Something might have been missing. I don't know if you went back and watched the matches that he called or anything. Yeah, overall, I think it was good. I think that, Red Dragon together was awesome. I actually called that, so I take a lot of credit in that. and then Adam Cole at the end. I think that's where they messed up, and I think that they did that on purpose. But the crowd was going crazy for about 30 seconds, and you could tell something was – it was either a fight in the stands or something was going on. And then, then you see O'Reilly and Fish on the apron, and Drew kind of awkwardly walked over to him and almost like got like the cue that Adam was behind him because he kind of winced up before he got hit. But it was a great ending. It was a great pay-per-view. Sanity, I guess you could say, pulled the upset and beat the AOP, which was kind of an awkward ending. But it was kind of cool to see Eric Young and not Kelly and Dane.
Sawyer. Oh,
yeah. The first German-born WWE champion, by the way.
Oh, really? Okay, that's interesting.
Yes, so that's awesome. Overall, it was a good show. I think that Drew McIntyre is screwed as champion. Unfortunately, he did win and he's the face, and what you do at the end doesn't do him any justice. I think, if you wanted to get those, and those guys are super over, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly, who he is the meanest looking dude when he walks, I will say that. Most serious guy, whatever you want to call it. But if they wanted to get that over as heels, I think they should have had like Johnny Gargano win the title or something like that. I think everybody cheering for Drew McIntyre to get beat up kind of is what it is,
I think honestly, I think they would have.
I think it was for Johnny's anybody, thing. but if it was Johnny, I think it could have been a little different just because of the crowd. But if it was like Nakamura, I think it would have worked something like that. But Drew was kind of like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I think it was just, he was put in a tough spot. I mean, it was a great show live. I'm not going to lie. I did not look forward to this show when I was coming in. I bought the tickets already. I was like, you know what? I haven't seen my friend Candace in a while. I haven't seen a few other people that were in attendance for a while. I'll go. I'll have fun. I said to myself, it's probably going to be a good show, but I've not been in it. Outside of the Roderick Strong stuff and Asuka, I've not really been enamored with NXT as a whole at all.
No, I actually missed the last two episodes, and I did not go back and watch them leading up to this.
And I actually was disappointed that Roddy wasn't on the show at all.
lot of guys were missing from the show.
Yeah, it was disappointing. But I'll say this. I'll start from the beginning. I got to the show a little late. I guess I missed there was a Lars Sullivan and No Way Jose match, which is weird because I got there like 7:20. It's only like 5 minutes late, but apparently No Way Jose was in action.
They taped a couple matches for this week's NXT, which they always do.
Yeah, so I missed that match if that did happen. I was in the middle of Peyton Royce against Sarah Logan, and Peyton Royce got the win. Nobody really knew who Sarah Logan was. Her and Billie Kay were baby faces. On Twitter, I saw they were bugging Daniel Bryan in the skybox to get checked out because above me in my section, actually, section 111, they had a section reserved for WWE wrestlers. So Angle and Bryan were actually there scouting and storyline, which is pretty cool. And I actually did see right before the main event during Drew's entrance, Sheamus, since he's best friends with Drew and came up with Drew, filming his entrance because he was, you know, there to support him, which is pretty cool. I also saw...
That's pretty cool.
Who else did I see? I saw a bunch of dudes. I'm sure they'll come to mind. But yeah. Oh, Becky Lynch was up there too.
Well, on TV they had Becky and Bayley.
Yeah, but you know, she was
Sasha,
above us too. It was kind of interesting.
That's cool.
So yeah, I guess like the storyline is that Daniel Bryan's going to bring in the iconic duo of Billie Kay and Peyton Royce. Maybe they'll do the Bella Twins versus the iconic duo down the road.
Well, it's good. I mean, they need some women on SmackDown, so.
Yeah, and we'll tell Raw does too. They need some variety. It's been like the same girls every freaking week.
Well, I think how did the women's match come off live?
Ember Moon and Asuka. I think it might be the best. I don't know if it's the best WWE women's match of all time, but it's probably top two or three. It was an excellent match. I thought it was one of the
all time.
All time. And you know what? That might be one of the matches of the year too. I mean, how did I skip that one? That one, I mean, that was a great, great match. Why? Yeah. How did it come off on TV?
No, it was great. I think everybody thought Asuka was going to lose and go to the main roster, but I'm thinking now maybe Ember goes to the main roster.
Yeah.
They kept mentioning her. Well, I don't know if they kept mentioning, but they mentioned a couple of times that, you know, her whole family was in attendance and this and that. So kind of awkward that they would do that and not do a title change. So maybe.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, maybe she goes to the main roster and maybe Asuka ends up holding the title for a little bit longer. Maybe Kairi Sane wins the Mae Young Classic, who was signed from Stardom. She's a great wrestler herself. Caliber of Asuka maybe be higher than the caliber of Asuka, depending on who you ask. I didn't watch a lot of Stardom, but I'm familiar with her work, and she, you know, from what I've seen, she looks awesome. So I could see maybe her kind of taking that torch from Asuka and carrying it for the NXT brand, and maybe then Asuka goes up to the main roster, or maybe Asuka stays undefeated, goes to the main roster, wins the women's championship, and holds both belts, and then vacates it, and just leaves the lasting legacy as the Goldberg of NXT.
I wonder if what they're doing with Asuka is going to hurt her on the main roster, because I don't think on the main roster, and
no,
losses, and I think that's going to be an issue.
Hang on. I think what they do on the main roster is going to hurt her on the main roster, not what they're doing in NXT.
No, but that's what I...
That's what you mean, though. Like, you think they're going to trade wins and all this crap after she was
done
for 500
She's
days.
Not going to be as dominant, obviously, on the main roster, and I just... It's going to be weird.
Yeah, no, I agree. We'll see. Maybe they will actually protect her. Who knows? Maybe they'll actually protect her. Or you know what? Maybe she'll stay undefeated like Nakamura and only lose once, but she'll just have to sell for like Alexa Bliss for 30 minutes like Nakamura did for Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin.
Moving on.
So, the Peyton Royce match was okay. We had one of the highlights of the night was for a match tape for NXT. It was awesome. Tyler Bate came out. I didn't expect that. Tyler Bate came out with Trent Seven. They got a huge reaction to take on Wolfgang, who's a great athlete, and the returning Pete Dunne, who was injured a couple weeks ago at Progress Wrestling. Freaking awesome. He got a huge reaction. Forget size, okay? This dude is an absolute rock star, and he would succeed at any level on the main roster in any situation. He just... his in-ring presence, everything, the swagger, he's just so good. He really is. He's great. I love Pete Dunne. And Pete Dunne and Wolfgang got the win when, I believe Wolfgang hit a senton bomb on one of the guys, I think it was Trent Seven, to get the pin. Awesome match. Crowd loved it. You guys should definitely check it out in NXT. And then we had the main card, which was great. We had Code Orange, the local New York band, play the theme song for NXT. Not going to lie, I feel like 90% of the NXT TakeOver songs all sound the same, but it's still cool to see their live performance. And unlike other wrestling crowds, this crowd was actually pretty hyped and respectful of the band. They didn't boo them or anything. So we had Johnny Gargano versus Andrade Cien Almas, accompanied by Zelina, I think is who what Thea Trinidad's name is in NXT.
Let's just
now.
Go with Thea Trinidad, yeah.
Yeah, a.k.a. Mrs. Austin Aries in real life. And Andrade Cien Almas got the... Was it a clean win? It looked like a clean win from my end. Was there any kind of distraction?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember.
I don't think it was
No, it was? Johnny was going for the finish, and she threw the DIY shirt at him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which they didn't really mention that it was... They just said they threw something, but it was the DIY
shirt. Yeah, it happened very quick. And then Almas hit the running knees, pinned him 1-2-3. This was an excellent opening match. This is the best that Almas has looked since he's been in WWE, period.
Absolutely.
He looked like a star here. Johnny's Johnny. He's got himself in great shape. He's a great professional wrestler, an excellent babyface. But Andrade Cien Almas, this guy is awesome. This is just... Zelina is just what Andrade needed right now, other than his mask. I think if he put his mask back on and became La Sombra, he'd be even better. But since he can't go back in time, since they don't want to do that, this is the next best thing. I would like to see after this maybe them forming a stable with perhaps Kalisto and somebody else. I would love to see that. I mean, you can't call it Los Ingobernables because CMLL and New Japan own the rights to that. But for those that don't know, back in New Japan and CMLL, when he was La Sombra, he was in a group which still exists right now called LIJ, Los Ingobernables, the Ungovernables, where it was him, Tetsuya Naito, Bushi, Evil, and these guys just essentially were dudes that didn't give a damn to just... What the hell was that?
My apologies.
No worries.
That's my giggity text message. I thought I was on mute.
Yeah, no worries. They're essentially dudes that just don't care about authority at all. To the point where when Tetsuya Naito won the IC title in New Japan and won the IWGP heavyweight title, he threw the belt in the air. He slammed it on the ground. He dented the gold. He didn't care at all. Because you know, they're ungovernable. They don't care. And if for those that wonder where that Tranquilo spot came from, where you know Andrade Cien Almas like does this and rocks is on the ropes, that's one of Los Ingobernables' trademarks. That's one of Naito's trademark moves, where he runs, he teases, he's going to go for a dive. He instead somersaults and just does this, and you know that's the Tranquilo. They call that the Tranquilo spot. So it'd be really cool if they kind of take that concept of LIJ and do it in WWE. I think that'd be really good for Almas. Of course, you keep Tia Trinidad in there because she's an awesome heel manager, really good on the mic. She's got a great look. I don't know why the hell it took them so long to sign this girl. She's been a free agent for what, like 3-4 years? It's been years since she's been in TNA. But better late than never. I'm happy she's got a shot. She's a local girl from this area. Much respect to her. She has definitely enhanced Almas's character.
It seems like it took... Didn't The Rock use her in the filming of the Page family movie?
Yeah.
Seemed like it took that for that to happen.
Yeah, and amazing, because while Rock keeps up with wrestling, the guy's got a busy schedule, and he saw her talent before Deddy B did. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a great match. I did not expect that match to be as good as it was. We had the Authors of Pain take on Sanity. I'm not the biggest Sanity fan outside of Killian Dane and Nikki Cross, but...
Who might still be flattened somewhere in the Barclays Center.
Yeah, but they were babyfaces here against AOP. I've actually become a big Authors of Pain fan. I tweeted the other night, a year ago, I could not care less about the Authors of Pain. A year later, they're now one of my favorite acts in the company, and it's a testament to their hard work. It's a testament to their improvement. It's a testament to them just getting more comfortable with their characters. And Paul Ellering went from being just that old guy that's managing Authors of Pain to a dude that really is a great part of that whole package. So much respect to AOP. This was another great match. Hard hitting, all over the place. The highlight, as you mentioned, Scott, was there was a table set up on the corner on the outside of the ring. Nikki Cross went for a dive on... Who'd she go for a dive on?
I think it was Akam, I think.
Yeah.
It's 50-50.
One of the Authors of Pain. And then Killian Dane hits a flying crossbody onto Nikki, still being held by one of the AOP members, through the table. That was nuts.
Yeah.
That was nuts. Eric Young hit his flying elbow for the pin. 1-2-3.
No.
It wasn't the flying elbow?
No. That wasn't the finish.
Oh.
He did hit the flying elbow. It was a double team finish, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
The other one hit the move, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, their double team move, which I'll get the exact name of the move right here. Actually, let me pull up my notes. It's probably easier to do that. Okay. How'd they get the win? They got the double team. They did a double team neckbreaker. No. Okay. Yeah, yes, double team neckbreaker. This is a great match. And afterwards, Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, Red Dragon, for those that don't know, they were a standout tag team for many years in Ring of Honor wrestling and in New Japan and on the indies. They came out and attacked both guys, set their sights on the tag titles. Both men previously debuted in singles matches on NXT TV, but this is the first time we've seen them together. And they definitely made an impact.
Absolutely. There's no other way to say it.
Had Neville in the crowd and Shinsuke and Kalisto in the crowd as well. Crowd went nuts for Shinsuke. Jim Ross was the guest commentator for this match. I think the previous match was Corey Graves was the guest commentator. This match was Jim Ross. Yep. Code Orange came out to play Aleister Black's theme song, which is great. Aleister Black's one of my favorite acts right now. He took on Hideo Itami. This was another great match that saw Aleister Black block the go-to-sleep attempt. He hit the black mask kick and pinned him 1-2-3. Just awesome match.
A match, honestly, I wasn't looking forward to, and it was. It was a great match.
It was a great match, and I'll say this. While the crowd was a little lull during the periods where Aleister Black was selling, this did show that Aleister Black can be in long matches and still get over and you know, get the crowd in his hand. Because I think that was a problem early on in his NXT career, and even in recent months, where he has these badass performances in a short amount of time, but if you put him in a match longer than 5 minutes, it's kind of like, okay, now what? Because he's been booked like Goldberg. He's a great worker, but you know, he's been booked like Goldberg, and fans have been trained to see him finish guys quickly.
Well, reverting back to what you said about Fish and O'Reilly, he did have a good 15-minute match with O'Reilly at NXT a couple weeks ago. So
yeah,
you know, he can go.
No, for sure. And yeah, he's a man. He's an awesome worker. The sky's the limit for him. And remember that idea you had where you said Nakamura should debut and just win the world title? Which, with the benefit of hindsight, was a better idea than what they've been doing.
I do remember that. Yes. Yeah. Are you going to say that about Aleister Black?
I think I said that about Aleister Black.
No, are you going to? Well, are you going
to? Oh, am I going to? Yeah, okay. Isn't SmackDown going to have another show in the UK in a couple months?
Probably.
Okay, let me double check here.
I think October.
Yes, I'm almost positive. I'm almost as positive as Lil Wayne's drug test that they are going to have another UK tour. Let's see here. Okay. Let me go all events. Let's do SmackDown. Let me search here. And I think they are not in September. Are they doing it? There we go. November 7th, Manchester Arena in Manchester, England. Scott, what do you think of? And who knows, maybe the WWE title would have been traded a couple times between Nock and Jinder by then. What do you think of Jinder Mahal being the world champion, challenging anybody to a match, and Daniel Bryan books Jinder Mahal versus a mystery opponent for the main event? And the mystery opponent turns out to be the UK's own Aleister Black, and in dominant fashion, Aleister Black pins him to win the WWE championship. Now, normally, I'm not for this. I think they've done it so many times. It's very cliche and whatnot. But I think this is the rare time where it could actually work and be of benefit to WWE, not just short term, but long term. What do you think?
I'm thinking if Jinder is champion in November, I want a time machine so I can go back in time.
Even if he's like a transitional champion, meaning like Nock could win in like September, Jinder is folded just to like.
I don't see enough of him right now to say that. I know what you're getting at. I think he has to have a couple more of these type matches where he can prove himself a little bit better. You know, his matches, to a degree, you know, his NXT career has kind of resembled Baron Corbin's, where he had these quick 10-second matches, 15-second matches, build up. He has to maintain it. And I know he's a different character than Corbin. I get that. He's a different person. He's probably a much better performer, but he still has to prove it, you know?
Right.
And you don't want to set that bar. And I know November's, you know, still a couple months away, so we have time, but it could work. It depends what they do with the character.
True. No, you're absolutely right. But just an idea. We had Asuka submit Ember Moon with the Asuka lock. This was a excellent match. One of the greatest women's matches in WWE history. One of the better matches in WWE history, period. And Ember hit the Eclipse. Asuka kicked out. They did a great job of selling Ember's... Well, Ember and Asuka both did a great job of selling the intensity of this match, the stakes. Ember was just knocking Asuka down from out of the gate, just going for it, being relentless, trying her damnedest to beat Asuka, this woman she's never freaking beaten. She's tried so damn hard, and she just could not do it. Over and over. And finally, Asuka, barely able to move, locks in that Asuka lock. Ember escapes. Asuka locks in it again. And Ember just has to tap out. Afterwards, Ember got a standing ovation. Great freaking match. Great match. Asuka is the best women's wrestler in WWE history, and it's not even close. Screw the main roster.
Now, I've received a message on Facebook from my friend Robert Root, who says that in his opinion, there's no way that was a top three match all time, and we're forgetting about Trish and Lita. This is also a guy who thought Melina versus Alicia Fox was the greatest match ever. Let's keep that in mind. All right, he really didn't think that last part, but he did message me with the... I mean, Trish and Lita had some great matches. Come on. Don't get me wrong,
They furthered the division, okay, and helped continue to break the barriers, and they deserve the utmost respect for that, and they did. They were very popular, and their place in WWE history and wrestling history is safe. But in terms of just match quality and talent in that ring, okay, there are very few women's matches in WWE history that can touch that. Very, very few. There's few matches on the main roster over the last few years that can touch that outside of the top guys. Excellent match. And then we had Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens at ringside, and we had Drew McIntyre versus Bobby Roode. The NYPD pipe and drum band came out and performed Drew McIntyre's theme, and he walked down the ring with them. That was cool as hell. I really liked that. Cool.
Everybody got a tear in their eye hearing the bagpipes thinking of Rowdy Piper.
Yeah, it was great, and it's just the intensity of Drew McIntyre. You said he's got like the best mean guy entrance in the business, like the best mean mug. I certainly think so. I mean, Braun Strowman has one too, but I mean, Drew McIntyre is just an intense dude. Walked to the ring. Bobby Roode did his glorious entrance, not as elaborate as his debut last year, where he had the huge platform, you know, bring him right down. But this was still a great entrance. And then the match started. And like a lot of Bobby Roode matches, as much as I love the guy, the match did not live up to the rest of the TakeOver card.
I never realized that Bobby Roode was smaller, I guess, than Drew. I thought Bobby was about 6'5", 6'6".
No, he looks bigger than he is.
6'7", but he's, no, yeah.
Drew's huge. Drew is a huge dude. He's like 6'5", 6'6". And Drew ended up getting the win with the, what's he call that kick? The not the glorious DDT. Oh, the Claymore. The Claymore. Yeah, these weird finishers from the former 3MB people. He kicked out of one glorious DDT. He got hit with another one. Roode was going to go for another one, and then he hit a second Claymore to get the win. The first Claymore he hit, I think Bobby rolled out of the ring earlier in the match.
And
worked hard. There was a crazy spot where Drew went for a flip dive on the outside, but Roode barely caught him, so Drew went splat.
Half on his shoulder. Yeah, oh my God.
That looked brutal. The ending was great, but I'd say it was a very good match, but it was not at the level of the other matches throughout the night. And I love Bobby Roode. He's one of my favorite wrestlers. But I think, I don't know, because I've mentioned this before. I've seen Bobby Roode live multiple times, and I even saw him in a match with Bobby Lashley on a card where he had to follow four. I'm trying to think how to say this. Okay. I went to a TNA Impact Wrestling card a few years ago, right? There was a TLC match with the Hardys, the American Wolves, and the Dudleys. They tore the house down. 40 minutes later, Bobby Roode had to have a one-on-one straight-up pro wrestling match with Bobby Lashley. Now, you would think that the crowd would be dead by then. This was a long show. This is when they were doing like those marathon New York tapings, trying to tape like 6-7 straight shows. It was crazy, right? Trying to save money. Their future was uncertain on Spike TV. These dudes tore, and granted, Bobby Lashley is a big part of it, tore the house down with just some badass pro wrestling. So I don't know if my taste in wrestling has just evolved over time. I don't know if everybody's taste has just evolved. I don't know if he's just slowed down since TNA. I don't know if his character is not as intense in the ring as it was in TNA. I know he was a babyface back then, and even as a heel, he seemed to have more of like a fire in him. I don't know what it is, but something is missing in some of Bobby Roode's NXT matches. Not all of them. He had a great match with Roderick Strong. I really liked the Hideo Itami match. That might have been his best match other than that last Nakamura match. But other than that, I don't know. I feel like sometimes his matches are just kind of there until the ending.
Well, keep in mind we said that about Samoa Joe, and he stepped it up lately.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe this is just what they want from him. Yeah. You know, maybe they don't need the character. You know, the character is kind of what he is. So true. They don't need necessarily that guy to have those matches, you know?
True. I mean,
he's doing a good job. I mean,
he's doing a good job, but it's just like, I don't know. I'm not even saying he has to do crazy spots. Just turn up the intensity a little bit. I feel like it's just a little slow. Like, I had a guy behind me doing live commentary. He was like, neck breaker, go for a chop. Yes. Hit him with a punch. Him.
It would have been awesome.
Clothesline. And he kept like predicting Bobby Roode's moves. Like it was hilarious. He was like, kick. Yeah.
That sounds like early punch. 90s WWE video game commentary.
Yeah, I was like, punch. Yeah. Hit him with the neck breaker. Hit him with the neck breaker. He hit the neck breaker. And we're just dying laughing because, like, again, I love Bobby Roode, but it was so true. It's just so patterned. Honestly, like, I love the guy, but he's kind of like, and this is not really an insult because I think a lot of people would rather be compared to this guy than others. He's kind of a poor man's Triple H at this stage of his career, in a way. Triple H and Bobby Roode, it doesn't matter what matches preceded them, they're going to have their style of match no matter what. Now, do I think that Triple H in any stage of his career over the last like 10, 20 years could have a different kind of match based on how the crowd reacts? Absolutely. Bobby Roode, yes. But for whatever reason, you know, we saw it at WrestleMania. These guys have a tendency to just, you know, I'm going to do my match. You like it or you hate it, I'm going to do my match. More often than not, it does work out for Triple H and Bobby Roode because they are great workers. But, man, I don't know. I don't know. Again, it was a very good match. I don't want to hate on it at all. It was a very, very good match. I'd say like a 3.5-star match. It was not a bad match at all. But before the aftermath, I was wondering why the hell was this the main event. So afterwards, Drew McIntyre wins. Some people in my section start chanting, "You deserve it," which led me to give him the side eye. And then Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly are on the apron. They're just staring down Drew. And my main man, who I saw live a couple months ago at ROH, Adam Cole, baby, former Ring of Honor champion, runs out, attacks Drew McIntyre, hit him with two super kicks. Apparently on the second one, he didn't really get him. But from my vantage point, it didn't look that bad. And in the replays, I guess they had a good camera angle that covered up for him. He posed with the NXT championship. He walked out with Fish and O'Reilly. And as the show went off the air, after the show went off the air, the fans were just waiting for his catchphrase. He's going to walk out. Everybody's thinking, all right, he's just going to be intense and not say anything. And when he's up the ramp, he just goes, "Adam Cole, baby." And the crowd goes nuts. And throughout the whole night when they did the 1-2, whenever it was a near fall, they'd do sweet. For the Young Bucks. There were a lot of Young Bucks fans. There were Elite chants. There were Bullet Club chants. There were two sweet chants when Adam Cole was out because he's, of course, a former Bullet Club member. And then afterwards, when we were exiting the arena and it was just bottlenecked, you hear seriously, there's one for like 10, 15 minutes. People singing Adam Cole, baby, chanting Too Sweet, singing the Elite theme song. The Elite. It was nuts. And seriously, dude, I saw a ton of Bullet Club shirts. I'm not kidding. I saw Adam Cole shirts. I saw Bullet Club shirts. I saw Marty Scurll shirts. I even saw two kids. They had to be like 12 or 13. I kid you not. And Kenny Omega shirts. This was a hardcore crowd. And it just goes to show you that the world, thanks to the internet, has gotten smaller. And it goes to show you that the Bullet Club, you know, and all those guys, especially the top guys, are phenomenal self-promoters. They really are. They really are. The Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Adam Cole, even long before the Bullet Club. These are guys that, you know, it's just a testament to their talent, their hard work, their appeal, and their hustle, man. Their hustle is just unbelievable. Adam Cole was the most over person in that building. And that was his first time on WWE television. Think about that. Yeah, a lot of people watch Ring of Honor, but has Ring of Honor ever gotten 9,000-10,000 people in an arena? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Granted, they may be able to next year or the year after if Daniel Bryan's a free agent, if they're able to ever lure CM Punk, or maybe they're able to do something big with New Japan. You never know. It could happen, and I think it'd be a great accomplishment for professional wrestling outside of WWE in North America.
Funny you say that about Daniel Bryan. Did you see what Cody Rhodes did tonight or last night at the overseas?
No.
He was doing the yes. Mm. And Daniel Bryan did tweet, interesting.
And Brie Bella straight up said that in an interview that, you know what, I'm cool with Daniel Bryan wrestling and we'll see what happens. And Daniel Bryan has said that he told Edge and Christian on their podcast that, you know, if it's deemed too unhealthy for him to wrestle again, you know, a year from now, he won't wrestle again, but he's expecting to wrestle again. And I don't think WWE's going to bring him back because it's, you know, for the medical liability. And he was very complimentary about WWE, but can you imagine Daniel Bryan back in ROH against, like, say, Kenny Omega or something like that, or New Japan?
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. My God. The only reason I...
Although, if Bryan had to worry about concussions before with those knees that Omega does...
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of me that wants to see Bryan in New Japan, but there's another part of me that looks at the physicality of those matches at the G1. And if you guys haven't seen any of those recent New Japan Pro Wrestling matches, if you have Access TV, tune in every Friday night, DVR it, or sign up for newjapanworld.com. I cannot recommend enough the caliber of wrestling. That's another reason why I wasn't that excited for NXT going in, because this was the year where I really said, like, you know what, I'm going to try to watch New Japan more often, try to watch some more other types of wrestling more often. And I do every now and then, but it's just, you know, been busy the last couple of years with my job and project management. It's just tough between this job and the TV show. I've really been spread thin. And, you know, this springtime was a really low period for WWE. Yeah, there were some good matches here and there, but you know how it is, Scott, the WrestleMania hangover and all that stuff. And I just said, I need something different. And I went out of my way to watch a lot of the matches from the G1 tournament, and... Well, I don't think it's conducive to a lengthy career with some of the bumps these dudes took. The storytelling, the selling, the athleticism.
It's a different style altogether. So.
The style altogether. I mean, honest to God, New Japan Pro Wrestling right now, main event-wise, might have the best roster we've ever seen since maybe, I kid you not, maybe since WCW at its peak. I mean, not even main event roster, but just like, remember when WCW had such a stacked roster between like, Jericho and Eddie Guerrero on the undercard, and you had all these other dudes, and Rey Mysterio, and Juventud Guerrera, and of course,
well, the whole cruiserweight division, really. Yeah.
I mean, they had in 97, they probably had the best roster top to bottom of all time. You know, I think in terms of just talent, not star power, but talent, I think New Japan has that right now. It's unbelievable. I cannot recommend it enough. And if you don't have the money for a New Japan Pro World subscription, that's fine. If you maybe don't have the time, whatever. I would at least suggest, if you have Access TV, seeking out the show. Or on YouTube, they upload a lot of free matches. Go back, go and watch some of the matches they've uploaded. Trust me, you will thank me, okay? Because I think it's 2017. Fans have raised their standards, and that's why guys like Baron Corbin and Big Cass have a much harder time. In the mid 2000s, they had a hard time too, but. At least they got some leeway. But now, whew, with New Japan out there, with all the great work that's going on in the indies, with the great work that we saw in the Fatal 4-Way tonight, with the great work that we see from John Cena and Cesaro and Sheamus and Seth and Dean tonight, I mean, you know, if you want to make it to the top of WWE these days, you got to have your work in shoes, or you got to stand out. And even Jinder, even though he's not like a flashy champion or a great pro wrestler, the guy at least has something. Now, whether or not you think he should be champion is another story, but at least he's stepped up as much as he can given the circumstances. Will Baron Corbin step up going forward? Will Big Cass step up? Will guys that are on the come up step up that, you know, are limited like those dudes? We'll see. But overall, NXT TakeOver, massive thumbs up. SummerSlam, thumbs up. I wouldn't say SummerSlam was as good top to bottom as TakeOver, but that Fatal 4-Way was just unbelievable. So overall, great show. I want to thank you guys for watching. Some people are asking here, my man Ross Martin, are we taking calls? We're not taking calls tonight. It's a bit of a late night, but if you guys want me to take calls, I will open up the Skype lines later in the week. I want to thank you so much for watching. Just to give you guys a little rundown of what we're doing this week, my Madden review will be up at some point this week. I got an early copy. I've been reviewing it. Haven't had as much time to play it as I'd like to, but I am going to be playing it. I'm going to be reviewing it. It is a great great sports game. I haven't really dove into the career mode, but if you love Madden 17, I think you'll really love Madden 18. You'll enjoy that review. That review will be up later this week on youtube.com/TSCGaming. I'm also reviewing a game called The Escapist 2, which is really good. As far as right here on the TSC News YouTube channel and podcast, we are going to be previewing the McGregor versus Mayweather matchup this Thursday on MNN, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, my show that airs in New York City. That video will be up on Friday right here on this channel. And Saturday, I will be having a live recap of Mayweather versus McGregor. Scott, you're more than welcome to call in, hop on Skype, and chat with me about it. Hell, it's to be determined, but I may even do my first live chat during the event in 2 years. We'll see. We'll see. I'll keep you guys posted. But as far as Mayweather versus McGregor coverage, we definitely have your back on that one. And sometime this week, too, I will be recapping Raw and SmackDown Live, as well as the aftermath of NXT Brooklyn. Whew.
Folks, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. Action-packed. I think you guys will enjoy it. Scott, I know you'll enjoy it as always. Maybe you'll join us. Congratulations again to your beautiful wife.
Thank you for the birth of your
second daughter. Until then, everybody, tweet us, Facebook us, do what you got to do. If you enjoyed this content right here that we provided you tonight, please smash that subscribe button. Smash that like button. Share this on social media with all your friends. Like our Facebook page. We do a ton of Facebook Lives. Do what you got to do. As always, everybody, until next time, enjoy the matches.